There's something I have to ask you.
May I ask you a question?
That is a question. Would you like to ask me another one?
Chris Guillebeau is a fascinating dude. A few years ago, he made it his goal to visit every country in the world before his 35th birthday. He's already visited over 175 of them and is on pace to complete the quest next year in 2013. He's also a writer, entrepreneur, purveyor of the blog The Art of Nonconformity, and author of the excellent book by the same name. His mission is to help people live unconventional lives, make their own choices, and change the world. He also created the World Domination Summit, which quite frankly is an event in Portland that was one of our personal highlights last year in 2011, and we are so excited to be returning again this year. And he's got a new book out called The $100 Startup, which can help you reinvent the way you make a living, do what you love, and create a new future. So, Chris, we are so happy for you to be with us. Thanks for being with us today. How are you?
I am good. Thank you, Jason. Thanks, Kim. Thanks for having me. And that's a great introduction. No one's ever introduced me as a fascinating dude before.
First and foremost.
We could probably interview you for like 3 hours because there's so many interesting things I would love to talk to you about. And I really wanted to make this. I don't want to go into all of the stuff that you've probably been asked a million times, although some of our questions will be recaps. But I just want to invite the listeners to check out his website and his books because
so much
you will find a lot of interesting things about all of the things. So like I said, we could go forever. But we wanted to start with the travel because I think that's how I first heard about you. How has your travel quest changed you? Now that you've been doing this, you're so far into it, how has it changed you?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's a big question. I was trying to think how to create some kind of concise answer. I mean, it's changed me in small ways and big ways. I started traveling more than 10 years ago and lived in West Africa for a few years. So in many ways, like West Africa was the first place that I went to. And that's the poorest country in the world. So there's lots of hard things about being there, the poorest region in the world. But there's also really, you know, great things and beautiful things and amazing people. So, you know, from there I started going to all kinds of other countries and doing this this crazy quest. I guess, you know, when I started, I thought I was a fairly open-minded person. But then I kind of realized, you know, in fact, I'm not. And we all have our own worldview and our own way of thinking about things. And, you know, I didn't, you know, even though I thought I knew a lot of people in America, like I didn't know a lot of people from elsewhere around the world and people who had different backgrounds than mine. So, you know, as I would go and tour mosques, you know, in the Middle East or the Persian Gulf, or as I would go and visit Buddhist temples or Hindu temples or things like that, you realize like people have their own stories and they have their own way of life and their own way of thinking about things. And so that was one change. It may sound kind of trite, but for me it was significant just to really understand how big the world is. How interconnected the world is in some ways and how distant it is in other ways. So it's just been a lot of things. And then also just, you know, personally affecting me and the whole nature of the quest and a lot of solitary time, just going places where I don't speak the language or don't necessarily understand what's going on, but learning to be comfortable with that. So it's been a long process and overall it's been great and amazing.
That's what I love about reading your blog is the, you know, from time to time you give highlights of what you've been doing and how you got there, because now you're at a point where there's a lot of tricky places to get to, and this is not that anyone would think this, but this is not a very easy goal to have. So I like reading those behind the scenes sorts of accounts. And I would say this is probably an impossible question to answer in a lot of ways, because I'm sure there's a lot of answers to this. But who or what is something that has rendered you awestruck along the way? Is there one or two things that kind of stand out among, I'm sure, what are many?
Yeah, this is something that I'm kind of processing myself as I come to the end of the journey over the next year, because in some ways, like, I feel like I'm still in it and I'm just transitioning, and I have all these weird emotions about coming to the end of a quest I've been working on for 10 years. But, you know, to pick out one of those moments, one of the stories that I like to tell was when I first went to Sierra Leone. And I ended up riding in a Land Rover back to the capital of Freetown, and there was a few other people in the Land Rover, and we were stuck in traffic for like an hour and a half, and there are these roaming vendors that kind of like walk the streets and selling different things. If you need to buy a broom, you know, you can buy a broom on the side of the street. They're also selling like soft drinks and things. So there was a young woman sitting next to me in the car, a Sierra Leonean woman, and the driver stopped and bought soft drinks and kind of passed them back back to the back of the vehicle. And I had heard the woman's story about how she had been married and her husband was killed during the war and she had at least one child. And so this kind of like heartbreaking story, but you know, you also like hear these stories a lot. So it was kind of just kind of going through my mind. And anyway, we got the, you know, this basket of drinks and there was like a Sprite and a Coca-Cola. And so I took a Sprite for myself and I opened it and I gave one to her. But she just like held it in her hand for a while. And finally I realized like she had no idea how to open the can. And I realized like she had actually never opened like a soft drink, you know, before. And so I opened it and gave it to her and she took a sip and then she smiled. And I just thought like, wow, this is really fascinating because here we are in this age where we're all connected, supposedly, and the world is flat. You know, that book had just come out, which is a great book, of course. But nevertheless, the whole idea is that, you know, in some ways the world's connected. In other ways, there's still lots of people living traditional lives, you know, who've never opened, a can of Sprite or Coca-Cola or whatever before. And that definitely left me awestruck.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
That's very interesting. Well, as you know, our thing is talking about adultitis, and and as we define it, it's a condition that occurs when people lose their childlike spirit. So it breeds stress, depression, anxiety, fear, and sometimes even the inability to smile, which we often see. On the flip side, people who have adultitis under control tend to have big dreams, and they're playful, curious, passionate. So in your world travels, what countries have you found to be the most adultitis-free? And how does that usually manifest when you notice that?
Yeah, I love your question. I love the whole scope of your work and everything that you guys do. I think maybe like a quick answer is to say like, okay, certain countries like maybe Bhutan or maybe some other South Asian countries, some countries that have a more relaxed way of life or more conscious about, you know, these things, more playful, curious, and passionate. And I think in some ways it's true. But I think in other ways it can be a little bit of a generality to say like, you know, this country is like this and this country is like, because there's always outliers and like, you know, this whole subject of nonconformity that we talk about, like there's nonconformists everywhere, you know? And one of the things that has been fascinating to me is like, I have a lot of blog readers from countries like Germany and Japan, you know, which are traditionally thought of as kind of conformist cultures, you know, like post-war places where, you know, everybody's supposed to think the same way and do the same way. So I feel like, you know, it's more a question of people and of maybe culture as opposed to like nationality. Like you can go to places that might be very rigid, like Sweden or Denmark or something, but then there's still like people there that are dreamers and are kind of following their own way.
Definitely. So yeah, because what I was thinking with that question is it really could be completely different when you talk about the people or the technical governments, you know,
right.
I mean, you could have a communistic government and that doesn't necessarily mean the people are adultitis ridden or whatever. So, are there cultures, are there parts where you've been kind of just impressed by how they look at things? I mean, cause I gotta be honest, I gotta assume that America has gotta be one of the most adultitis ridden, but there are so many not, I mean, it's like people in one household, there can be the range, right? So, but I haven't done a lot of the world traveling. So I'm curious if there's, you know, nooks and crannies of the world where you're kind of like, wow, these people kind of see things in a different way and would be good to kind of emulate that.
Yeah. I mean, well, I mentioned Bhutan briefly, like Bhutan is this whole country that measures itself based on gross national happiness, you know, as opposed to gross national product. And some people believe, you know, some people believe that's kind of like a marketing device, you know, basically. but that would be the cynical, you know, response to it. But I mean, like I was there and like, it is a pretty fascinating place. It is pretty much like still, you know, still in another world and another culture. And, you know, there's a value of exploration. There's archery is the national sport. So like everyone like grows up, you know, wanting to you know, succeed in the national games or whatever, and then whenever the games take place, the whole country kind of shuts down to focus on that. So it might be something worth looking at there.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So okay, have to ask this. April 7th, 2013, Oslo, Norway.
That's right.
It's your last stop, final country. You're planning kind of a party with other people to join you. You mentioned this earlier, and I know you've talked about this a little bit on your blog. What emotions come to mind when you think of that day and about what's next?
You know, that day should be great. Like, that day's going to be fun. What next I'm worried about?
Yeah.
I'm sure that day will be fine, and, you know, we'll have a lot of friends, and it'll be a good experience. But it is the question of what comes next, and I didn't really realize it. You know, my wife, Jolie, for maybe 2 years, she's been asking me, like, what's coming up next? And I'm just kind of like, oh, whatever, honey. Like, it'll be fine. Like, I'll do something, you know. And she's like, no, I really want you to think about this because I think you know, it's likely that you could become depressed, you know, out of this. And I was like, oh, I'm sure it's going to be fine. But then it basically, like last year, I finally realized I was on a trip and all of a sudden it just hit me. I was like, oh, this is coming to an end. This is what I've been doing for 10 years. This is my identity in some ways. You know, I'll keep traveling. I'll keep writing. I'll keep doing my stuff. But I'm losing this whole, like, quest aspect. And that is a big part of it for me. So I'm really not sure. I mean, not certain. I'm sure it'll be fine. But it is kind of thing that it's the thing that I'm processing right now and trying to figure out what's next.
Yeah. And it's probably one of those things you probably won't know until then.
Yeah.
And that's
right.
And that's cool. And certainly I have no doubts that you'll figure out another quest. I mean, that's you're going to be just fine. So,
yeah. So moving on to the nonconformity, which is something that after attending World Domination Summit last year, Jason and I were just fascinated by the commonality of the nonconformity of, you know, you've got all these different people from all parts of the world, you know, in Portland enjoying each other's company and the different speakers you guys put together. But that nonconformity piece was the common denominator, and it was fascinating to us.
As opposed to a specific profession,
right,
or
associations,
yeah,
or, you know, that sort
right
of thing. So,
right,
so tell us about this. Why is the idea of nonconformity so important to you, and why did that become your banner or rallying cry, so to speak?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like this whole new shift in thinking about demographics and thinking about psychographics instead. So what you're talking about right there is a perfect example of psychographics, of people identifying based on a common ideal or a common worldview, as opposed to something that I would say is somewhat irrelevant, like what age they are, what their ethnic background is, you know, socioeconomic, you know, all these things are like traditional demographics. So I guess in my case, you know, how did it become a rallying cry? Well, I needed some kind of theme, you know, for what I wanted to do. What I wanted to do had a fair amount to do with travel, as we've been discussing, and also a fair amount to do with self-employment or entrepreneurship. But it was more than just those things. And plus, there's other people who already kind of speak to those things very well. And so I guess I wanted something broader. And I also have been the kind of person, I have a lot of different interests, and I don't really want to limit myself. And I know I'm going to get bored if I focus only on one thing. And so for this project, I just wanted to make sure I wasn't going to get bored. And so I thought, what ties everything together? It is this question of worldview. It is this message of you don't have to live your life the way other people expect you to. You can do good things for yourself and for others at the same time. And so I wanted to just kind of build the foundation on that. And that way we could have different expressions and different strategies, you know, and different, you know, approaches, but within that framework.
Interesting.
Well, thank you for doing so, because we found a sense of belonging there. For
oh,
sure,
good.
You know?
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I think in our circle of our friends and immediate friends and family, I think we feel like completely weird and out there. And going to Portland, it was like, oh, we're kind of not, we're like typical white bread, you know, middle American kind of people. So, but it was kind of cool to then, I think for us, I love the idea of being with people who challenge your worldview. And even if it is super extreme, like I have 20 items that I have in my personal possession, you know, it's like, even if I never want to go that far, it challenges me to say, okay, can I make some steps in that direction? What is the spirit of that? So I found it to be very valuable and fascinating.
Mm. I'm glad you were there. You're a big part of it.
It was fun. So so let's talk a little bit about this this book you have coming out, The $100 Startup.
Mm-hmm.
What's the premise and why did you write it? Because, again, you probably could have written your first book was kind of a general overview of everything that you kind of embody and your blog embodies. And you certainly could have gone a million different ways in the next book. So why this book? Why now? And what are you going with?
Yeah, good questions. So the central message of the book is, you know, if you want to start a small business, or even if you want to just kind of create more freedom for yourself, you know, through earning additional income, the skills that you already have are the skills that you need, and the money that you already have is the money that you need. So in other words, if you want to start a business, you don't have to get an MBA, you don't have to write a business plan that no one's ever going to read, you don't have to beg for money at the bank, et cetera. And you know, the book is essentially two things. One, it's the stories of all of these people. I call them just ordinary people from all walks of life who ended up starting businesses based on something they were passionate about, something they were skilled in, and then found a way to, you know, make that meaningful and valuable to the world. None of them were traditional entrepreneurs. None of them, you know, came from that business school background. And so I met all these people, or at least many of them, when I was on my first book tour. I hear from them from all over the world. So I wanted to tell their stories. That's the first part. And the second part is, there's a lot of books that provide some general information, and I wanted to provide something specific. And so there's a lot of books that say kind of like, you know, go for it, and I think that's great. But, you know, the message of this book is like, okay, when you're ready to go for it, here's what you do, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people who are like ready to take the next step, but they don't necessarily know what the next step is. And so what my hope was to provide some kind of data-driven, you know, very specific manual with lots of, you know, charts and checklists and do this, don't do this, you know, that kind of thing, for people who are trying to figure out like how can they can create more freedom for themselves.
That's awesome. I have to tell you, I'm selfishly happy about this book because, you know, I remember a couple years ago, Kim and I went to a family reunion, and there was a couple people there who were out of work and had been so for maybe a year, and they're kind of still looking for someone to give them a job. And I thought of how so many people have a dream inside of a business they'd like to start, but the stumbling block is often like, well, like, how do I do it? And I can't quit my job now because it's bringing in money to pay the bills. And I have, so it's like, if you have no money whatsoever and you're out of a job, why not spend that time creating something? And in that year's time, you could have created something awesome. And so having this book is something to point people to, to say, here, do this. This will give you the legitimate tips to get started. And it's cool to be able to have a resource like this out here.
Well, cool. Thanks. I'm excited about it. And my main hope for it is that it helps people, you know, to make those next steps. That's the entire goal.
Cool. So I want to switch gears a little bit again. Kim and I, when we do our speaking and our work, a lot of it revolves around the idea of, quote, life balance, work-life balance. And to be honest, I hate that term. Because so many people have different versions of what that means. And it's kind of something that we kind of, I don't want to say embrace, but we fall under because it is such a common term that it's easy for people to find us that way. But I was impressed by one of the things you wrote, I think, in the Art of Nonconformity book. You said that let's embrace more life, not less. Balanced people don't change the world, and I'd rather spend my time feeling worn out from meaningful activities and projects. Could you speak a little bit about that, of how you feel about life, work-life balance, so to speak?
Yeah, well, I think you put it pretty well, and I think in some ways, like, these are semantical issues. Like, you know, when I say I don't like the word balance, like, you know, I like other words. I like alignment. I like, I don't know, like living a meaningful, adventurous life, and so, you know, I don't mean to say that no one should have a balanced life. What I mean to say is, like, no one should accept mediocrity. And there's this whole philosophy, partly about minimalism, and I don't mean to criticize minimalism, but I feel like there's almost like an escapism philosophy that derives from that. And that escapism philosophy is kind of like, you should just kind of shut yourself down and say no to things and, like, put up all these barriers between yourself and the world and don't challenge yourself. And so I guess, you know, speaking of rallying cry, I want to be a rallying cry for an alternate message for those who want the alternate message. And that message is, you know, you should tire yourself out. You should say yes to things you're excited about. And, you know, if you have an idea for something and you're like, wow, that's a big thing, I'm not sure I can do it, but it sounds really exciting, why shouldn't you, you know? Mm-hmm. And in my life, you know, whatever success I've found, it's from saying yes to things as opposed to saying no to things. And I just want to fill my life with all kinds of good things. So that's my message, you know, and that's how I kind of think about those things.
Well said.
Yeah.
So we thank you for taking some time. We have what we like to call a lightning round
of okay.
a few final questions that are really just meant to be kind of like off the cuff, whatever comes to mind as a way we like to kind of finish things off. So you want to start there, Kim?
Yeah, sure. Yep. So what would you tell someone who is afraid of traveling to another country?
Well, I guess I would say there's no reason to be afraid. And people often assume there's like a bad thing that's going to happen, but what if something really good happened?
Good point. That's cool. What's the best way for an average person to save money while traveling? Maybe something someone never thinks about.
I would say sign up for frequent flyer programs and spend just a short amount of time, like 20 minutes a month, and you'll be able to earn at least one or more free plane tickets every year.
Cool.
If you could spend a week anywhere in the world, where would it be?
Now that you've been almost everywhere in the world.
Super. You know, I was just recently in the Solomon Islands, and it was really an amazing place, so I'd love to go back there for a week.
Cool. When you were little, what did you want to be when you grew up?
You know, when I was about six, I wanted to work at Burger King. That's one of those childhood dreams that I'm actually happy that it died away.
I was going to say, Chris, that could be what's next. After this big quest.
Oh, if it is, Jason, you'll be the first to know.
That's awesome. So what was your favorite toy when you were little?
I was a big video gamer, actually. So I had a Commodore 64 when I was
nice.
Like 6.
We did too.
Yeah, okay, right on. And then an Atari 2600, and then, yeah. I mean, three video game systems since then. So those were my main toys.
What was your favorite video game on the Atari?
Oh, on the Atari? Well, Activision always made the best games.
Okay.
Thought. So there was one called Keystone Capers that was really good.
Okay. I never played that one. Interesting.
Yeah, I have to check it out on eBay.
Cool. And finally, what is the worst piece of advice you've ever been given?
You know, I had a hard time in school, in traditional school, and I was a high school dropout and then later ended up going to grad school. But along the way, everyone always told me that I really had to understand higher math and I had to learn, you know, algebra and geometry and all these things. And I never, ever did. I really didn't. It was just awful. But it was fine, you know, and I'm doing okay.
Yeah, so, yeah.
I have never once figured out how I'm using trigonometry in my life. Yeah. So, all right. Thank you, Chris. You are you're great to talk to. You're an awesome person, and we wish you much success with the book and continued success as you finish up your travel quest. And we look forward to seeing you in a few months in Portland. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today.
Oh, thank you guys. Thank you so much, and I can't wait to see you again soon.
Okay.
All right.
Take care.
Safe travels.
All right, bye-bye.